It is our Breakfast with Ben's podcast, our weekly hockey podcast with Seth Rorbo of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. You can catch Seth at all of his hockey coverage throughout, well, every week during the hockey season at the Trib, the offseason as well. The Penguins trying to extend their season and make the playoffs. It's still going to be difficult. It's still going to be nip and tuck the rest of the way. Currently sitting in the last playoff spot behind the New York Islanders. But with the win against the Nashville Predators on Thursday night, they maintain their advantage over the Panthers. And Seth, what did you think about how the Penguins played against Nashville? Was that the stereotypical definition of a team shutout, or do you give more credit to Tristan Jarry, the goaltender, than that? Was that more about him?
I mean, I think it was a team effort all around. I mean, let's be fair up front here. The Nashville Predators aren't very good, so it wasn't like the biggest challenge in the world. The biggest challenge in the world will be coming up here on Saturday when they play the Boston Bruins, who have already secured the President's Trophy as the best team in the regular season. But as far as the Penguins are concerned, you know, I thought that was a team-wide win, and that includes Tristan Jarry, 28 saves. On the surface, 28 saves isn't too daunting, but he had to make a couple challenging saves, including I think there was a breakaway with, 11 minutes left in the game. They were up 1-0 on Philip Tomasino. He came through with some tough saves. And at the same time, too, I thought the Penguins did a pretty good job of limiting the number of quality scoring chances that the Predators were able to put on net. In fact, I think after the Penguins went up 2-0 with that power play goal by Jake Guentzel there, maybe with 10 minutes or so left in the third period, the Penguins really, I think they limited the Predators to 4 shots after that. So, I think everyone deserves a little bit of credit there. What's the popular saying? Success is everyone's child, but failure is an orphan. In this case, everyone kind of could take some blame or credit, I guess, for how that game unfolded. Tristan Jarry took a very, good first step forward, I guess, in terms of maybe rehabbing his game a little bit here. And the Penguins played a game that, frankly, they haven't offered too often this season, or too infrequently this season, in terms of securing wins late in games.
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say that failure has been an orphan for the Penguins, but I will say that Brian Dumoulin, Jeff Carter, and Tristan Jarry have been orphan triplets at times this year. They've definitely taken a lot of their fair share of heat for the way the season has gone at different moments in 2023, but Carter's played a little bit better lately, scored a few goals. Jarry gets the shutout 2-0 over the Preds, and Dumoulin went full-on Bobby Orr with an assist on the first goal to Zucker, didn't he?
Yeah. In fact, I thought both the two defensemen on that play had a real good pass. P.O. Joseph's pass out of the defensive zone to catching the Nashville on a line change was really sharp. And then obviously, the star of that sequence, I guess, was Brian Dumoulin pulling out, some moves there to set up Jason Zucker there. I wanted to start calling him Bobby DeMorlin, if I can use that terrible joke that I use every once in a while on Twitter. But, again, I don't think Brian Dumoulin's ever going to, make anyone forget about Paul Coffey. But if you ever look back at some of his high school clips, I mean, he looked like Bobby Orr when he was playing high school hockey in Maine. I get, high school hockey in Maine isn't exactly the Quebec Major Junior League, but he has an underlying offensive skill set, always has throughout his career. It's just his defensive game has been his bread and butter throughout most of his career there. And just every once in a while, when he does show off some of those hands, it does surprise you. But he's always shown it, shades of it throughout his career. It's just clearly isn't his most prominent skill set.
Big revelation post-game, Jason Zucker and Brian Dumoulin are wine guys. Zucker said he was going to buy Dumoulin a bottle of wine for that pass. I think younger men drink wine a lot earlier in their lives than I did when I was in my late 20s and early 30s, Seth.
I'm guessing when you have 7 figures, you probably have a higher, a more sophisticated palate than most of us. So, and also, hey, Brian Dumoulin, like I say, he's from Maine. They probably eat a lot of lobster up there. So, you need a good white wine goes with lobster. Is that correct? So,
yeah, I think it's more. Well, I don't know. Honestly, I spent a lot of summers in Maine growing up in New England, and I love lobster. But like I said, if I had lobster, I usually had a light beer to go along with it. The lobster's sort of in between. Generally, yes, I think you pair white with seafood, but, lobster is a little bit more meaty. It's a little bit more thick. I think you might go with red. I believe Dumoulin said a Pinot So yeah, he does have a nice refined palate. He wasn't afraid to go there and break it down for us. I didn't realize he might go into like the sommelier business after he leaves the Penguins.
Either way, I think if the three of us walked into the state store, he'd be looking at a different shelf than the two of us. So.
No doubt about it. Zucker aging like a fine wine, certainly, Seth. I just hope he doesn't really hit his peak years when he's beyond Pittsburgh and he's somewhere else next season.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn on that, mainly just because, first off, we don't know who's going to be in charge of the Penguins once their season comes to an end. That's going to dictate everything. But if you're talking in a vacuum, I would love to have Jason Zucker back for the Penguins' purposes. He clearly sets a tone for them. He I don't want to say he's a Chris Kunitz clone. They're two different players, but he helps establish some things for them just in terms of attitude on the ice. A forecheck, and there's clearly some scoring touch there. My concern is, though, he's on the other side of 30 here. He has an injury history, and just given the way he plays, you can see why. I mean, he really puts his body at risk a lot of times. So if you extended a 4 or 5 year contract to him, that's just not going to age well. It almost kind of reminds me of when the Penguins gave Patrick Hornquist a 5-year deal. Yeah. And shrewdly, they found a way to get away from him when they brought in Mike Matheson. But given his history, given his age, and given some of the other needs the Penguins may need have to fill this offseason, like say a goaltending position, I'm just a little bit hesitant to extend Jason Zucker for anything significant term. And his interest, I mean, he has every right and every obligation himself to seek out the best contract possible. I think he's at 5.5. I mean, I would assume he's at least do something just in terms of money, at least $6 million a year, maybe, or could fairly, ask for that on the free agent market, and forget about, term or the length of the contract. Just, I just see a lot of complications, just given the Penguins' overall situation, if you wanted to extend Jason Zucker long term.
In the immediate future for the playoff contenders in the wild card, Penguins right now in 8th with 7 games remaining. 84 points is what they have, 3 behind the 7th place Islanders, who have 76 points. New York's next 3 games are tough. You talked about the Penguins having the Bruins next. There's nobody tougher than that. But the Islanders have themselves 2 games against the Lightning and a game against the Carolina Hurricanes. And the Panthers, they've got sort of an odd schedule, if I remember right here. I got to bring it up in front of me. But they got the Blue Jackets as their next opponent. So that looks like 2 very attainable points on Saturday. Yeah, and then they got Buffalo, Ottawa, Washington. So they've got a bunch of teams currently not in the playoff mix, at least not as high up in it as they are, all from the Eastern Conference. And they wrap up with Toronto and Carolina. So they got 2 really hard games at the end. When you look at the schedule, the way it lays out for these 3 teams, how do you think the Penguins are positioned compared to their 2 most close opponents right now in the wildcard race?
Well, I think the saving grace is just the Penguins have 1 less game played to this point. So they have a game in hand here. To use the tired phrase, they control their own destiny. As far as the Penguins are concerned, I don't know what to expect from them from a night to night basis. I mean, they can pull out a really tight, disciplined game, as they did against Nashville and as they did against Colorado last week on that, national TV game on TNT. They went into Colorado and limited the Avalanche's chances and got a good performance from Tristan Jarry. Then they played the woebegone Detroit Red Wings and they give up a field goal in the first period, this past week. So, again, I don't know what to make of it, just in terms of how the Penguins play, because it seems like it's a different, kettle of fish every single game for them. And it's hard to make heads or tails of it. And it's almost irrelevant of the opponent. I mean, they can play a really good game against the Boston Bruins, perhaps, on Saturday here, maybe even get a win. Then they can have a huge letdown against the Philadelphia Flyers, a terrible team like that. So that's very much within the realm of possibility with this group. And it's they've never seemed to sustain traction either, positively or negatively. I mean, it's 3 steps forward, 2 back, 4 forward, 5 back a lot of times with them, and they usually are back in the same place there. So I acknowledge there's maybe some variations in the schedules there for all the teams you mentioned there, but for the Penguins themselves, it's a very volatile group in just terms of how they play, regardless of who they play.
The Flyers, by the way, will be traveling to Pittsburgh for Sunday's game. They've got the Sabres at home on Saturday, so that's a bit of an advantage for the Penguins as well. They've got the Bruins, though, first and foremost on Saturday. So given that reality, Seth, how do you sort of view where the Penguins are against the Bruins? And I heard Phil Bork say this. He kind of thinks that this is a take a look behind the curtain game, I believe is how he phrased it, insofar as the Penguins, you know, probably will get the Bruins in the playoffs. They want to show what they're worth, and maybe this is how you make up for the loss against Detroit and all that. But I still see the Bruins as a dominant team, and there's no way I'm assuming 2 points out of this.
Well, I guess the one thing that maybe works in the Penguins' benefit is the Bruins have already clinched the President's Trophy, so they have home ice throughout the playoffs. There's nothing tangibly more for the Boston Bruins to accomplish, so maybe they rest some guys, and maybe, you know, that motivation to play and or you know, play a full game for the Boston Bruins isn't quite there. That said, there's maybe some historical markers they're still chasing, so there's maybe some, you know, impetus there for them to give an honest effort. But either way, you might not get the Boston Bruins at their truly best one way or another, whether it's through personnel or motivation. At the same time, too, you know, the Penguins have played the Bruins fairly tough this season, and, you know, both losses so far, they were all one goal losses. You know, the one was pretty ugly, I think, back in November, where they gave up like a 2 or 3 goal lead in the second period and lost in overtime. That was poor. And they offered a pretty awesome effort at the Winter Classic at Fenway Park on January 2nd. So, they haven't been blown out of the water by this team throughout the season. So maybe there's some room for confidence or foundation for confidence in that sense. But I think clearly the biggest motivating factor for the Penguins just has to be, you know, they're still fighting for a playoff spot, you know, and it'd be nice to get some confidence against the best team in the NHL and all that. But just from a tangible standpoint, the biggest thing they can attain out of this game is to try to get to 2 points and try to, you know, keep pace with the Islanders and try to keep fending off the Florida Panthers.
Yeah, I look at the Bruins and, you know, it's kind of funny to me. I was tracking some of the coverage from back in Boston this week, and there's so few things to complain about that I guess they've had a little bit of a rough time on the power play lately. And the discussion was pull David Pastrnak off the power play. this is the degree. I kind of feel this way sometimes when the Penguins are in first place all year. You know, the Steelers are on the roll and they're like a 13-win team. You're trying to find reasons why something's not going to work in the playoffs, you know?
Yeah, it's like trying to find the one eyelash that's out of place on the Beauty Queen. I think that might be the biggest obstacle for the Boston Bruins moving forward. It might just be trying to battle through any kind of complacency that might set in here for the next, you know, 2 weeks or wherever it is until the playoffs start. I mean, they can get some guys, they can rest some guys, get some guys healthy. You know, they got some older players on that roster like Patrice Bergeron and Brad Marchand, who I think actually suffered a broken nose against Columbus when he got hit in the head or in the face with a cross check from Kirill Marchenko, the Blue Jackets. So, you know, hey, you know, getting some rest for some of those older guys might not be the worst thing. You get some of your depth players some playing time. You know, that could help. But, man, we've seen that in the past with the Penguins where, you know, they've had things wrapped up. And, you know, maybe they give some of their older guys a rest here and there, and it doesn't always work out as well as everyone hopes. But that, to me, would seem to be the only obstacle the Boston Bruins have to face at this point between now and the end of the regular season. So it's a very well-constructed team. It's very well-coached with Jim Montgomery. They still have a lot of discipline and structure in place from the previous coach, Bruce Cassidy. And Jim Montgomery's maybe, you know, tapped into it with a different message and, you know, made them a little bit more dangerous offensively. But, it seems to be pretty smooth sailing here until the start of the playoffs here for the Boston Bruins.
You were right, Seth. Through no less of an authority than thespruceeats.com, the number one wine pair to pair with lobster is, quote, hands down, Chardonnay. Many Chardonnay wines spend time in oak and also have they go through the malolactic fermentation, both of which will bring out the rich, buttery tones to the wine, and oftentimes you get lobster that is made with butter and cream-based sauces. Hence, Chardonnay. So, good nose by you. You figured that one out.
Well, I'm sure it'll pair well with the fried cod I eat tonight. So,
Seth, Thanks. I appreciate it, man. All the best. We'll do it again. Not next week. I'm off next week. We'll see where they sit going in the last couple games when I come back from Florida. I'll keep an eye on the Panthers while I'm down there. Then we'll check in, okay?
Sounds good, Tim. Anytime.
All right. Seth Rorba has been our guest here on the Breakfast with Ben's podcast, talking hockey. Make sure you read him at Trib Live this week and next, and we'll have another hockey podcast just before the end of the regular season here on Breakfast with Ben's.